Good morning. As was the case yesterday, we'll be passing out a few handouts that we can use during the class, and we have some for the other sessions today. I really do appreciate all of you coming out yesterday and today. Obviously, the last couple days, my wife and kids and I have spent the time with Joe, and we've learned a lot about all of you, and I have to say that we are continually impressed. Where we live in Athens, Alabama, as you know, there are a number of churches in Limestone County. And in fact, we worship at a congregation that's probably about a 7-minute, 8-minute drive from our house. And we actually pass two other congregations between our house and where we worship. The situation is not the same over here. And with that being said, I'm just so impressed by how far so many of you travel to get here. And it speaks a lot of you and the quality of person that you are and the love that you have for God. And it really does mean a lot to all of us. This morning, I want to spend a period of time in Judges, the first chapter. But if you'll open up your Bibles to Genesis 12, we're going to start there briefly. And what we'd like to talk about this morning, I entitled this lesson, Dealing with Evil Influences. Now, the problem is, I'm only really going to talk about that for about 2 minutes at the very end. So this is kind of a lesson that has like a 30, 35-minute introduction and a 2-minute lesson. And so if you can just kind of bear with me a little bit. For this session, as well as the 3 o'clock session today, I'm treating these kind of like the way we did yesterday. I consider this kind of laid-back time. I'll be presenting a lot of stuff, but if I ask a question, feel free to answer. And I think we'll probably finish up a little bit early. And so just like yesterday afternoon, if you have some questions, we'll probably have 5 or 6 or 7 minutes at the end of this class period to answer any questions that you may have. And those questions can be about anything related to biblical geography over in Israel. But in Genesis, there are some passages in the Bible that, at least for me, I always wonder, why in the world are we told this? We have a lot of prophets, major prophets and minor prophets, but for the most part, they kind of say the same thing. And so I wonder, why is Habakkuk here? Why do we have Haggai? I mean, I've got Isaiah and Jeremiah. Why do I need these other ones? Or I can look at a passage like Matthew, the first chapter, with the genealogy of Jesus. That's just a list of names. Or I could look at a book like Numbers. Why in the world do I care about how many people there are from one family in the tribe of Manasseh? But of course, as you study those passages, swallow your pride a little bit and study those passages, you learn that, oh, there's valuable lessons in those. And that's why God gave those to us. And I kind of feel the same way about Judges, the first chapter. And we're going to spend nearly our entire time in Judges, the first chapter. But in order to understand Judges, the first chapter, you got to jump back a little bit to Genesis. Genesis, the 12th chapter, beginning in verse 1, it says, "Now the Lord said to Abram, go to your country and your kindred and your father's house to a land that I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." In this passage, we all know it. God has made either one promise with 3 parts or 3 promises, however you want to look at it. But one of those promises was that he would give his family a land. And of course, we know that he fulfilled that promise. If you look at Deuteronomy, the 11th chapter. After they've left Egypt and they've wandered in the wilderness and they're getting ready to enter into the land, Deuteronomy 11th chapter, verse 8, it says, "You will therefore keep the whole commandment that I command you this day, that you may be strong and go in and take possession of the land that you are going over to possess, and that you may live long in the land that the Lord swore to your fathers to give to them and to their offspring, a land flowing with milk and honey. For the land that you are entering to take possession of is not like the land of Egypt for which you have come, where you sowed your seed and irrigated it like a garden of vegetables. But the land that you are going over to possess is land of hills and valleys, which drinks water by the rain from heaven, a land from the Lord your God, a land that the Lord your God cares for. The eyes of the Lord your God are always upon it, in the beginning of the year to the end of the year. This is a wonderful, wonderful statement about the fulfillment, the upcoming fulfillment of the land promise to the nation of Israel. And in this passage and in other passages, we read that if the Israelites went into the land and did what God told them to do, He would bless them. And if they didn't, that they would not receive all of the blessings from God. And so God said, I'm going to give you a land. And we know that this was the land that He wanted. This is what God wanted from the very beginning. God said, I want to give you a land, and this is what I want. It would look something like this. But then we come to Judges, the first chapter. And so let's just take this map out of the way, and let's put a blank map up here. I want to look at this passage from a different perspective. You can analyze verses in the Bible or chapters in the Bible different ways. But I want to look at Judges, the first chapter, from a geographical standpoint. And so to do that, we're going to need a map. And that's why we have this blank map up here. And so what I want to do is I want to read through this chapter. And I want us to look at it from a geographical standpoint. And to do so, we're going to get a better picture of why this chapter exists. And perhaps we'll pull a few lessons out of it at the very end. So, let's get started. First verse of chapter 1 of Judges, it says, after the death of Joshua, the people of Israel inquired of the Lord, who shall go up first for us against the Canaanites to fight against them? The Lord said, Judah shall go up. Behold, I have given the land into his hand. And Judah said to Simeon, his brother, come up with me into the territory allotted to me, that you may fight against the Canaanites, and I will likewise go with you into the territory allotted to you. So Simeon went with him. Then Judah went up, and the Lord gave the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hand, and they defeated 10,000 of them at Bezek. They found Adoni-Bezek at Bezek and fought against him and defeated the Canaanites and the Perizzites. Adoni-Bezek fled, but they pursued him and caught him and cut off his thumbs and his big toes. And Adoni-Bezek said, 70 kings with their thumbs and their big toes cut off used to pick up scraps under my table, as I have done, so God has repaid me. And they brought him to Jerusalem, and he died there. So this first seven verses is about the fact they've moved in and they've gone to a place called Bezek, and they've done exactly what God wanted them to do. They have defeated the king there. They've given everybody out. And so what we want to do is go to the area of Bezek. We're going to color that green. That's good. They have done that. All right, let's keep reading. Verse 8, the men of Judah fought against Jerusalem and captured it, and struck it with the edge of the sword, and set the city on fire. All right? So let's look at Jerusalem. Jerusalem now, we'll mark that with green as well. They have done exactly what they need to do here. Verse 9, and afterward the men of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites who lived in the hill country, in the Negev, and in the lowlands. And Judah went against the Canaanites who lived at Hebron. Now the name of Hebron was formerly Kiriath Arba, and they defeated Sheshimi, Ahiman, and Talmai. Okay, a couple things here. Well, first of all, it says they went down into the Negev and to the lowlands in the hill country. So, and they did what they needed to do. So let's color that area green. Now there's a couple points I want to make here. First of all, remember yesterday in the first session, I said there was an area called the Shvelah. That's a Hebrew word for the, and in our English Bibles, it's translated as lowlands. Here's an example of that. The lowlands. This was an area that's about 10 miles wide, 20 miles north to south. It's got some hills and valleys, but they're very low, not very high, wide valleys. And this is here in the lowlands. And so they come here, and they do exactly what God said. Now, this is a little tangent here. These three guys that they mention here at the end of verse 10, do you recognize the names of these three guys? Let's look over at Numbers, the 13th chapter. Just keep one finger here in Judges 1. Look over at Numbers, the 13th chapter. Numbers 13. Verse 22, it says, they went up into the Negev and came to Hebron. Ahiman, Sheshea, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, were there. Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And look down at verse 32. It says, they brought to the people of Israel a bad report of the land that they had spied out, saying, the land through which we had gone to spy out is a land that devours its inhabitants. Of all the people that were in it are of great height. And we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, who came from the Nephilim. And we seemed like to ourselves like grasshoppers. So that's what we seemed to them. These three guys are the sons of Anak, the descendants of Anak. And of course, it was these three guys, among others, that the spies had compared themselves to and said, we are grasshoppers compared to these guys. And that's what they brought the bad report to. And of course, that bad report, because it was believed by the Israelites, caused them to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. Now look back over at Judges 1. They've gone down to the Negev, gone down to the same location, and guess what? They have defeated these three guys. The three guys that they had compared themselves against 40 years ago, that had caused them to wander in the wilderness, they had finally defeated these three guys. Think about what that meant to Joshua and Caleb, to finally defeat these guys. I mean, Joshua and Caleb for 40 years probably thought of these three guys as well as others and said, if the other spies and the people just hadn't believed and hadn't compared themselves to these three guys, then we might have been here 40 years ago. And so I am sure this battle was celebrated by Joshua and Caleb a lot. But let's keep reading. Let's look in verse 11. And from there they from there they went against the inhabitants of Debir. The name of Debir was formerly Kiriath Sepher. And Caleb said, he who attacks Kiriath Sepher and captures it, I will give them Akash, my daughter, for a wife. And Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, captured it. And when he gave him Akash, his daughter, for a wife, and when she came to him, she urged him to ask her father for a field. And she dismounted from her donkey. And Caleb said to her, what do you want? She said, give me a blessing. Since you have set me in the land of the Negev, give me also springs of water. And Caleb gave her the upper springs and the lower springs. So let's find Debir on this map, and we'll mark that green. They did exactly what they were supposed to do. They went into this area of land. They destroyed everybody. They took the land exactly the way God told them to do. And of course, I think there's an interesting story here about when they went down to the Negev. For those of us who traveled over there and traveled down to Beersheba, Beersheba kind of sits right on the edge of the Negev. You look down the south. If you look to the north, it's green. If you look to the south of Beersheba, it's all dry. And that's getting down to the area of the Negev. And what's the one thing here that she asked for? She says, you've put us in the Negev. You've given us the land of the Negev. What's one more thing that we need? Water. Yeah, we need water. And of course, that's what they get. Water is so very important in all parts of the land. Okay, let's look at verse 16. And the descendants of Kenite, Moses' father-in-law, went up to the people in Judah from the city of Palms into the wilderness of Judah, which lies in the Negev near Arad. And they went and settled with the people. What's the city of Palms? Jericho. Jericho is called the city of Palms a number of times in Scripture. And when you visit Jericho today, you're struck by the number of palm trees there are still in the city. But they mention here that they've gone from the city of Palms to the wilderness of Judea and into the Negev near Arad. But what did they do? Yeah, they went in and settled in with the people. Did they destroy the people? No. They went in and settled with the people. Well, this is going to be a problem. They have not done what God wanted to do. Let's color that yellow. That's not good. They did not follow exactly what they were supposed to have done here. So let's continue. Verse 17. And Judah went with Simeon, his brother, and they defeated Canaanites who inhabited Zephath and devoted it to its destruction. So the name of the city was called Hormah. Judah also captured Gaza with its territory, and Ashkelon with its territory, and Ekron with its territory. Okay, fantastic. They're doing, again, exactly what they're supposed to do. These cities are out on the coastal plain, the southern end of the coastal plain. They have captured the area here of Ashkelon, Ekron, and they've done exactly what God wanted them to do. Color that in green. Verse 19. The Lord was with Judah, and he took possession of the hill country. But he did not drive out the inhabitants of the plain, because they had chariots of iron. So this is kind of a mixed thing. They took possession of the hill country, but as far as part of the plain, they did not drive out the people because of their chariots of iron. Another tangent here. They didn't drive them out because of their chariots of iron. Who was... The chariots of iron caused problems for who? That's a 40-word question. It caused problems for the people. Who, in a sense, who is driving out these people? God is. God is driving. Do you think God was worried about the chariots of iron? No. God wasn't worried about that. The people. The people saw these chariots and they feared going down there. A little bit of faith in God would have done them a lot of good here as they went down into this area. Okay, let's keep reading. Verse 21. But the people of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who lived in Jerusalem. So the Jebusites have lived with the people of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day. Now wait a minute. I think, didn't we read back in verse 8, the men of Judah fought against Jerusalem and captured and struck it with the edge of the sword and set the city on fire. I thought we already got rid of all the people in Jerusalem. But what has apparently happened in the meantime? The Jebusites have come back into the city somehow. And of course, what happened? And now what happens? Verse 21. They said that this time they've gone back in Jerusalem and they did not drive out the Jebusites. So now they're living with the Jebusites in the city of Jerusalem. So Jerusalem was green. We're going to have to change that green to yellow. Change that to yellow, there we go. Change that to yellow here. Okay, so let's pick up in verse 22. The house of Joseph also went up against Bethel, and the Lord was with them. The house of Joseph scouted out Bethel. Now the name of the city was formerly Luz. And the spies saw a man coming out of the city, and they said to him, "Please show us the way into the city, and we will deal kindly with you." And he showed them the way into the city, and they struck the city with the edge of the sword, but they let the man and his family go. And the man went to the land of the Hittites and built a city and called its name Luz. Now it's that name to this day. So, they almost did what they were supposed to do here. They were successful in going into the city and destroying the city and destroying everything there, but they did allow a family to escape because this family had helped them. Now, as it turns out, that family didn't really affect them that much because they moved far enough away where they weren't really in effect. However, I don't know that we can totally give them a solid green here. So let's give them a light green just above Jerusalem there in this area of Bethel, because they almost did what God wanted them to do, but not completely. All right, verse 27. Manasseh did not drive out the inhabitants of Bethshan and its villages, or Taanach and its villages, or the inhabitants of Dor and its villages, or the inhabitants of Ibleam and its villages, or the inhabitants of Megiddo and its villages, for the Canaanites persisted in dwelling in the land. When Israel grew strong, they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but they did not drive them out completely. So here we have a new set of circumstances. The Israelites have come in and have actually captured the land, but they didn't drive out the people like they were supposed to. Now, they did force them to labor. So they were kind of slaves there, but they did not drive them out totally like they were supposed to. So with this area, which is just, it basically covers the area of the Jezreel Valley, this is going to be a light green. They almost did what God wanted them to do, but again, not completely. So let's look in verse 29. Ephraim did not drive out the Canaanites who lived in Gezer, so the Canaanites lived in Gezer among them. So we have a situation here. They went to Gezer, captured Gezer, but the Israelites, the Canaanites in Gezer lived with the Israelites. Again, not what God wanted. That's a yellow, because we now have the Israelites and the Canaanites living together. The Canaanites are living with the Israelites. Verse 30, Zebulun did not drive out the inhabitants of Kitron or the inhabitants of Nahal, so the Canaanites lived among them, but became subject to forced labor. So Zebulun, this is up to the north near the Sea of Galilee, they moved in, but they didn't drive the people out. Forced them to labor, but didn't drive them out. 31. Asher did not drive out the inhabitants of Akko, or the inhabitants of Sidon, or of Alab, or of Akzib, or Hebba, or Aphek, or Rehob. So the Asherites lived among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land, for they did not drive them out. All right. There's a subtle difference here. Does anybody pick up on the subtle difference here with this? He lived among them. Yeah. What did we read a couple verses ago? What? The Canaanites lived where? Among the Israelites. What about this verse? That's right. The Israelites are now living among the Canaanites. It's a subtle difference, but it's extremely important. The Israelites are now living. They went into the land, but they just went in and assumed what the Canaanites were already doing. So this is getting serious. So that we're going to color that orange. This is not good. This is not a good situation. Let's keep reading verse 33. Naphtali did not drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh or the inhabitants of Banath, for they lived among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land. Nonetheless, the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh and Banath became subject to forced labor with them. So just like the other ones that are similar to this, we're going to color that light green. All right, let's move now to the last one here. Verse 34. The Amorites pressed the people of Dan back into the hill country, for they did not allow them to come down to the plain. The Amorites persisted in dwelling in Mount Perez, in Ajalon, in Shalbim, but the hand of the house of Joseph rested heavily upon them, and they became subject to forced labor. And the border of the Ammonites ran from the ascent of Akrib, from Selah and upward. So now we have a situation. What's the deal here? The Danites are trying to take control of their territory, and what are the Amorites doing? They're resisting. They're resisting so hard that it even says that they did not allow them to come down. The Danites had a portion of land that had some in the hill country and some down in the plain, and the Amorites just said, "You're not coming down here. We're going to push you back up into the hill country. This is not good. This is red." They didn't even do. Not only did they not capture the land, not only did they not get the people out, but the people are just they're just controlling the area. The Canaanites are just absolutely controlling the area. And of course, another little tangent here. Let's jump to the end of the book of Judges. What do we know about the tribe of Dan? Did the tribe of Dan stay in this area? No, they didn't. They were the first tribe to kind of vacate the tribal allotment they'd been given. Where did they end up going? Do you remember? North, yeah. North. They went up and found a city that sits about right there called Laish. L-A-I-S-H. Little city called Laish. And they went up there and conquered that city and then renamed it Dan. And so that's where that name Dan comes from. But if you didn't remember the first chapter of Judges, you got to that story, you may think, why are they having such problems in their territory? Well, this is it. It's because they never actually controlled the territory that they were given anyway. So this is what you have. Let's talk about this for a minute with this map. Do you remember on the left is what God promised the people. God said, I'm going to give you land, and if you obey me and do what I say, this is what it's going to look like. On the right-hand side is what actually happened. And I think this is one of the reasons why we have Judges 1 here. Because what's the book of Judges about? It's obvious, various judges. But you know how these judges operated. These judges were not judges over the entire land. For the most part, they were judging over a small area of the land in which a little skirmish had happened. And so the people, the Israelites, would call out to God, and God would send a judge for that little area. For instance, Samson, he was pretty much in the Sorek Valley, just the little valley in the Shephelah. That's basically where he judged, if you want to use the word that way. But look at this map. This is why they were having problems from the get-go. The book of Judges is basically the bridge between the conquest of the land and the United Kingdom. And this is what they were dealing with from the get-go, from the very beginning. In fact, we say a lot of times that after the period of the Judges, there was a United Kingdom and then there was a divided kingdom. Why do we call it a United Kingdom? They're under one king. And not only are they under one king, but sometimes I think we call it a United Kingdom because they weren't yet divided. But look at this map. They were divided from the very beginning. The fact that that the United Kingdom and Saul and David and Solomon were able to consolidate them and use them as a united kingdom for so long is, quite frankly, it's actually remarkable. Because this is what they had been given to begin with, was this situation right here. So what lessons can we learn from Judges, the first chapter? Well, I can think of two or three. I'm sure y'all can think of some as well. But the first lesson that we can learn is God always delivers on His promises. How long had it been between the time they made the promise to Abraham and the time that he delivered on the land promise? About how long? A little bit longer. Abraham lived about 2000 B.C., and the conquest happened about 1400 B.C. So it was about 600 years. And we can sit here and we think, man, that's a long time. I mean, can you imagine being promised something and then having to wait 600 years for that to occur? But why are you here in this room today? We're all here because of a promise that we believe in. When was that promise made? When did Jesus say, I'm going to come back, and I'm going to give you, I'm going to bless you? That was 2,000 years ago. And here we sit. God delivers on His promises. He did to the Israelites. 600 years, He gave them a land. God will deliver on His promises to us today, even though it's been 2,000 years since that promise was given to us. That's the first lesson. God delivers on His promises. The second lesson we can learn is we need to obey God. God promises His people great things. Look at all that green. I mean, that's what God wants to give us. We need to obey God. It's easy for us to look around the world and just see people whose lives are completely messed up. And there's one reason why that is because they didn't obey God. And it's easy for us to look around and see that, but you know what's even harder is to look at ourselves. Think about the times in your life where you have just royally messed up. You've done something that you just shouldn't have done. Why did that happen? Probably for a moment, you weren't obeying God. You weren't doing what God said to do. And so that's one of the things that you have. But a third lesson. And this is, here's the lesson of the 35-minute intro. And that is, you got to get evil influences out of your life. You have to get evil influences out of your life. I want you, we know the end story here because we've got the rest of the scriptures. They came into the land. They didn't drive out the evil influences. In some ways, those evil influences just pushed them around. Years later, the nation divided. Years after that, the people were carried off into captivity. I mean, this right here was the beginning of a downward spiral for the people. And it was because they didn't believe in God, they didn't obey God, and they did not drive the evil influences out of their life. And guess what? It is easy for us to do the same thing. God, see here? God wants what's on the left. God wants what's on the left. He's told us, keep your lives pure. But what do we give Him sometimes? What's on the right? And listen, that's just the beginning of a downward spiral. You've got to push evil influences out of our life. Sometimes we say things like, you know, you can stay, but you're going to work for me. And then sometimes we say things like, you know, I'm going to let you live around me, but I'm in control. And then the next step is, you know what, if you don't mind, I'm just going to live with you. And then the next step is, we've lost all. And they're pushing us. The evil influences are pushing us around. And that's why I think this chapter is so important. I think this is why this chapter is given to us. It's because there's so many lessons that we can learn, and especially the lesson about evil influences. We've got to push those out. And those are the lessons from Judges, the first chapter. Okay. That's my lesson for this morning.